remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
It's Wednesday, which means it's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday, and we're back. It's another week. We're fresh off last week with Lanny Poffo, and we are fresh off our second ever live show, which took place this past Sunday at Jimmy's Seafood in Baltimore. The food was good. Francine looked beautiful, and Matt, you looked okay.
Well, it was a good time. I'm glad I could bring Matthew out, and we talked to a lot of Why It Ended fans. We ate some great seafood. We watched Survivor Series. It was a great time, but, you know, I filled up at Jimmy's Seafood, but tomorrow, Thanksgiving, time to fill up again. Robbie, what does a Robert Strauss Thanksgiving look like?
Well, I'm actually going with my wife's side of the family. We're going with her whole family. We run a big house in the Poconos in PA. We all have, like, our separate bedrooms and everything. There's a lot of, we have babies, a lot of her sisters and stuff have babies, so like there's so many little kids that are gonna be running around. It's like a movie scene,
right?
But I do usually agree, because I work out that morning, I'll find a gym and then I'll agree to let loose, and I think I'll just pretty much eat whatever I want.
So is that a thought you have, like on Thanksgiving, maybe like you don't get seconds, or you actually just go crazy?
Yeah, I do one or the other. If you're going to do something wrong, you do it right. So if I'm in, I'm all in. So like if I'm going to eat bad, I'm going to eat bad. But if I'm going to try and cut it, I'll just eat like turkey and won't have like carbs and stuff. But I think I'm going to eat bad.
Well, I'll tell you what we did that wasn't wrong was our interview with Lanny Poffo last week. Lanny was fantastic. Such an interesting guy.
Hey, did you know his dad was a wrestler?
His dad was a wrestler. So here's the best part about the show is that at some point, Lanny starts treating it like a quiz show. And he starts asking you just, have you heard of him?
Dude, I didn't fucking know anything. And I knew I would, but when he would just start to ask a question, I was like just cringing, because I'm like, God, this guy's going to hate me. I don't know anything about the history of professional wrestling if it doesn't involve like me or the Attitude Era.
Between you being a wrestler who didn't know anything and then me smoking, like I had a sense that that Lanny was starting to slowly hate us, but it turned out that he enjoyed the interview and he had a good time. I think it really showed what Why It Ended is all about.
Yeah, well, our Patreon subscribers are going to get the video version and actually see you blowing smoke basically in Lanny's face. So they're going to know why he gave you that spiel.
So the best part of it was, you know, as those of you who've seen me on video with Robbie or with Vince Russo know, I smoke a lot. And like as soon as Lanny starts reciting, you know, there was a man named Matt, he smoked and he was fat, or whatever he said. And so like I couldn't smoke again during the whole show. So I texted Robbie. I said, I've never wanted a cigarette so bad in my entire life. But we have a bit of an experiment today, Robbie. We're going to see how it goes. What do you think of what we're planning today?
I mean, history is going to be made here in Why It Ended. We got, for the first time, it's not just me, Matt, and a guest. It's me, Matt, and two guests. But, I mean, we've got the Headbangers, Mosh, and Thrasher. We couldn't have just one. We had to have them both. I mean, they're remembered both for being a tag team. And, you know, we want to hear both of their sides of the story. So, I mean, we're going to see how this thing works. And they're both super outgoing guys. I think it's going to work.
We will see, because I remember one of the biggest train wrecks I ever heard was the old Ric Flair show. They had the Nasty Boys on, and everybody was talking over each other and pausing at the same time. And I felt really bad for the host at the time. I didn't know him. His name was Conrad. And I'm like, that poor guy. And so I actually texted him today for some advice, and he gave me some good advice. But I'll give you guys some advice if you want to support the show. Check us out on Patreon, because if you're on there, we have an exclusive interview, probably our best Patreon exclusive interview ever with
ODB.
And I didn't know what ODB stood for. And
yeah, you made a fool of yourself.
I really did, you know, but it was a great interview. And so check it out, patreon.com/whyitended. But coming up, we have the Headbangers on
Why It Ended.
I should figure out how to say that in another language.
That's actually Robbie's real voice, by the way.
Hey, guys. So by now, you know about one of our main sponsors for the show. And I know you might be a little embarrassed to talk about it, but
it's our friends over at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now, I don't know about you, Robbie, but my hands are important to me. I play guitar and I play music and I type a lot. And so maybe for those of you who maybe want to take care of your hands or protect your hands or save you the trouble, you can go to StopUsingYourHand.com.
And listen, bro, there's no need to be embarrassed. It's all fully private. Any order from Pleasure Products USA comes in plain packaging with nothing indicating the contents, guys.
And you know what? Give the hand a rest. You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com. And if you go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo, enter in the coupon code FISTBUMP, and you can get a free stroker.
And remember, guys, no worries about getting found out because your credit card statement will not reflect that an adult product was purchased. So you're in the clear.
Now, StopUsingYourHand.com's premier product is called the 3V Starlet Stroker. And it's got a ton of features that you might not expect, you know, such as, you know, a real voice coming at you, or maybe a little movement in an unusual way. Where can you go? You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo. Use the coupon code FISTBUMP for your free stroker. StopUsingYourHand.com.
All right, you ready, Matt?
Chaz, yeah. Chaz drinks his own pee.
We'll save that for when we record it, bro.
I'm not limited to what I can drink anymore or eat anymore, so it's fine. I'm off the low iodine diet, so it's all good.
All right, you ready, Robbie?
Yep, let's do it.
Hey guys, joining us now for the first time, we are interviewing two people. We are interviewing former tag team champions. We all remember them. One of the greatest of all time, the Headbangers, Mosh Thrasher. Mosh, how you doing today?
We're doing tremendous. And we're not former tag teams. We're still current tag team champions of the universe. I mean, come on now. If you're gonna do the intro, do the intro right, Matt.
Matt, it's our first episode with two guys on at once, and you've already fucked it up. You've already ruined their introduction to put them in a bad mood.
You've already messed up the twosome, threesome, foursome we're about to have.
So, Glenn, right. What does it feel like to still be the tag team champion of the world?
I was getting excited to listen to all that twosome, threesome stuff. I don't know what that is. I feel like I'm back on the road again.
Our show isn't that cool, man. Our show is not that cool. Hey, so you guys now, what's funny is you both live close to each other in Florida, but when you grew up, because I know you trained at the same school in Jersey, you both trained at the Monster Factory. Did you live close to each other then when you started training?
Yeah, we were probably the same distance we are now, probably 15, 20 minutes away.
So you knew each other before training?
No, we kind of knew of each other because our high schools wrestled each other. So we kind of knew of each other in high school, but didn't really know each other, if that makes sense.
And so Glenn, when was the first time that you remember meeting your tag team partner for life, apparently, Mosh?
Yeah, I was the head trainer down at the Monster Factory for Larry Sharp. And Chaz came in for a tryout, and he went through the tryout and everything else. And, you know, he started wrestling. We started training. It was, 4 weeks in, and I think we went up to do jobs for Vince on TV. And we just hit it off right off the get-go. And it was a match made in heaven.
Well, wait, how long were you wrestling at that point before he started to already be like the head trainer at that school?
Well, no, I was there first. So I was probably there about a year and a half, maybe. I started in 91. I think Chaz started in 93.
And when he first came in, did you like him or did you guys get along?
Yeah. It was so funny because we hit it off right away. We started like hanging out together and stuff like that. So we hit it off right away. It was like a long lost brother or long lost relative that you knew was always out there, but you never found him. It was weird, and we had chemistry right away. He's my longest tendered relationship ever.
Now, Mosh, I know you guys have been asked this a million times, but I do want to ask this because I don't really know. How did you guys come up with the Headbangers thing? Of course, you know, everybody knows what it is. Everybody remembers it. And obviously a great gimmick because you guys have had it for so long. Who came up with it?
It was actually, we were wrestling in Arkansas, Ozark Mountain Wrestling with Burt Prentice, and Ricky Morton and Tracy Smothers were coming in from Smoky Mountain and coming in and doing spots. And what ended up happening was they took them back to Smoky Mountain, and Cornette called us. And Cornette said, "Hey, I want to bring you guys in. Love to have you in." He goes, "But I don't like the mask." That's when we were wrestling as the Spiders. We had the hoods on. Cornette goes, "I hate masks, but I want to bring you guys in. So I have this idea." He said, "I went to a Danzig concert," which is funny. Imagine Cornette being at a Danzig concert.
That's hilarious.
But he said these guys were slam dancing. They were, you know, in mosh pits. They were spitting on each other. They're beating the shit out of each other. He goes, "You guys being from the Northeast with your attitudes and your accents," he goes, "I just think, you know, you could, you know, make something of this." You know, they had earrings and makeup on. They wore skirts and dresses, all this crazy stuff. He goes, "Not that I want you guys to get that crazy." He goes, "But it's just kind of an idea." And I know exactly what he was talking about because I like that type of music. So I've been to those concerts, you know, Pantera concerts and Slayer and stuff back then, when they're slam dancing and they're beating the shit out of each other and stage diving and everything. So I knew exactly what he was talking about. So basically it was Cornette who came up with the gimmick, and then we kind of evolved it as we went along in Smoky Mountain and kind of grew it, and it gave us a chance to really dig our teeth into it. Because actually the very first TV we went to with Smoky Mountain, we didn't even have names. He goes, "I think I'm going to call you the Headbangers." He goes, "I think you're going to be like Mosh and Thrash or something." He goes, "I don't really know what your names are going to be." So at that point, we really didn't know anything. So we just kind of evolved it as we went along.
Hey, Glenn, were you a fan of that kind of music before you did the gimmick?
Yes, I was an Ozzy Osbourne, Metallica, you know, Guns N' Roses kind of guy, you know, when I was younger and stuff like that. And it was something, I mean, Cornette wanted us to be so off the wall. He was like, "I want you to go to the ring and I want you to spit in people's faces when you guys are driving down the street and you see roadkill. I want you guys to bring that." And, you know, it was so funny because he always said that, you know, "I saw these guys in skirts and dresses and stuff like that." And me and Chaz were like, "There's no way in hell we're wearing a dress." So
what ended up happening was that's when PG-13 was big down in Tennessee through Memphis and Nashville. And the first couple TVs we went to, we were just wearing shorts, and Cornette had given us t-shirts where he gave Glenn a Metallica one. I had a Slayer t-shirt, and that's what we were wearing. We're like rock band t-shirts, but it was like shorts with like some kind of boots or sneakers or something. So we kind of looked like PG-13. So we were actually walking around. We went to a thrift store right outside Knoxville. And I picked up a skirt and I put it on. I'm like, "We need to do it." And Glenn was like, "No way, I'm not wearing a skirt." I'm like, "Just buy a skirt. They're like $3. Let's see what happens." So we wore them, and we had so much heat that night. Here we are, two guys, face paint on, wearing skirts in Knoxville. We got so much heat that night. Cornette came up to us. He handed us each $20. He goes, "Go buy more skirts." He goes, "You guys are now wearing skirts." So that's kind of how
back then we got. And it was funny too, because he handed us $20 and we're like, "Oh my God, we just got tipped for the night."
That's more than our pay bonus.
You know, there's nothing funnier than to me than thinking of Jim Cornette like singing along to Mother or Twist of Cain at a Danzig show.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
Mother, like that's the best thing of all time. Go ahead.
So then after a while, when we would go in and get these skirts, we would be standing on the opposite sides of any kind of thrift shop and just, you know, 6'4", both of us, and bald, and, you know, after a while, and just yelling, "Hey, does this skirt look good on?" And just the heads would turn and stuff. It got to be funny and hilarious just for us to go get skirts.
So
yeah, the whole idea of the skirts was just to make us different than PG-13. And it just separated us from everybody right off the bat.
And I don't think anyone can argue that it did set you guys apart. Like, you think about the Headbangers gimmick, and you don't think of guys moshing, you know, in skirts, but it gave you that edge. Axl Rose was wearing a skirt at the time, and, you know, it's definitely it set you apart. So you're in Tennessee. What was it like as a tag team? And I guess I'll start with Mosh working. I mean, we're talking about Cornette, the Rock and Roll Express, Terry Gordy, Brad Armstrong. What was it like cutting your teeth in a territory with so many guys with such great tag team experience?
Well, I mean, it was just unbelievable. I mean, you're getting in there and you're in there with, you know, Ricky and Robert, somebody who is, you know, is a tag team that I watched in high school. And to actually get in the ring with them and have that experience with them was unbelievable. It's actually funny. One time, a funny story with Ricky and Robert. We're in the ring and we get done the match. And Robert goes, "Chaz, I was kicking you. I was doing this. I wasn't like you weren't selling it." And I was like, "Oh, I wasn't looking. I didn't feel it. I didn't know you were doing it. Like, I was selling, like crawling over to the ropes and I didn't feel it." I'm like, "Well, maybe you should lay it in a little bit more." So big mistake, because the next night we went to lock up and he punched me right in the nose. He goes, "You feel that?" And I'm like, "Lesson learned. Got it."
Was the locker room back then where, like, you know, you guys were a new tag team coming up with this hip gimmick, was everyone, were they helpful of it? Or were there guys that were maybe jealous trying to hold you down? Like, how was it back then?
No, let me start. You can finish. USWA was one way. USWA was, everyone was out for themselves. They didn't like new people coming in. They wanted to mess with you and kind of hold you down because, you know, you weren't one of them. Smoky Mountain locker room was totally different. It was like arms wide open, totally. Like, you know, come in and help. We actually, it was funny. This is probably the first time it's being announced. I'm kind of writing a book. And part of the book I'm at right now was when we got to Smoky Mountain. And Les Thatcher was one of the announcers, and we did a promo with him. And at the time I had no idea who Les Thatcher was, and no clue that, you know, in that area he was a legend, and, you know, everything I guess he has done in the business. So during the interview, I'm taking off his glasses and I'm sticking them in his ears and I'm sticking it up his nose and I'm putting them all crooked. Glenn's playing with his hair, and we got in the back, and D'Lo came up to me and he goes, "Dude, you're going to have so much heat." And I'm like, "Heat for what?" He's like, "What you did to the Les Thatcher." I'm like, "Who's Les Thatcher?" He's like, "The interview guy. Like, you don't know who that is?" And I was like, "No." So here I am going, I'm like, "Oh, shit, we're in big trouble. Like, I just messed with one of these guys." And, you know, long story short, at the end of the night, I went up to Les Thatcher. I'm like, "Les, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry if I offended you. Like, you know, maybe I shouldn't." He goes, "Offended me?" He goes, "That was awesome." He goes, "It's my job to get you over." He goes, "So I'm here to help you." He goes, "Whatever you need to do to me, go ahead and do to me." So my point of that story is USWA was one way, but Smoky Mountain was, everybody was on board to help everybody out. It was awesome.
And it's 100% true. I mean, when we first started with Smoky Mountain, we were brought in to replace the Gangsters. And at that time, I mean, Cornette told us why we were coming in and stuff like that. I've known Cornette for years, even before Smoky Mountain, because he used to come up and do shows for Larry. And the Gangsters were supposed to be finishing up down there. We were supposed to take their place. Well, let's just say their finishing up happened really, really fast, and we got thrown into it really, really quick. But just to, you know, have the people like Ricky and Robert and Brad Armstrong and, you know, all the Armstrongs down there and learning from, you know, those guys, you know, Al Snow was down there, Unabomb was down there, Kane, and just the guys that were down there, it was an awesome experience. And, you know, we were just excited because we were used to getting $40 a night from Memphis, and then we go over to Smoky Mountain, we're getting considerably much more, and, you know, we're throwing that money around on the bed and rolling around on it like we're, you know, Debbie Moore and stuff and everything. It was awesome.
And yeah, I mean, we went from USWA, where we're working, you know, Axel Oney and the Rotten Brothers, the Eliminators, you know, guys kind of still on their way up to Ozark Mountain, where we were working all local indie guys who basically we were training, so we had people to work with, to go to Smoky Mountain and have the Rock and Roll Express and Dirty White Boy and Tracy Smothers, you know, working I mean, that's probably who we worked primarily for this the last 6 months we were there was, you know, was the Thugs, Tracy and Tony and Rock and Roll Express. I mean, getting in there with them was just unbelievable.
We had Dr. Tom Pritchard there. I mean, he was just, you know, being in the ring and listening to him talk in the locker room. I mean, you hear it all the time. Robbie, you know, they always tell you, keep your mouth shut and just listen, you know, and you learn so much more from just sitting in the locker room and listening to everybody talk and their experience.
Yeah. No, totally, man.
And, you guys were in that SMW and were in USWA, and at that time, that was a good way to get to WWE because of the relationship that Cornette had. We've heard it from D'Lo. We've heard it from some other guys. You guys came up to WWE. You guys, you know, as yourselves or as the Spiders or the Arachnoids. You know, how did it come to be that you guys, and I'll start with Thrasher, how did it come to be that you guys were able to get that jump into WWE?
It was funny because the way how it was told to us, we knew that Smoky Mountain was closing down. And so what Cornette said to us, he goes, I'm going to try to get everybody, you know, in front of Vince for a tryout and everything else. He said, because they're starting to do this new thing on Saturday mornings where they want competitive matches. So they're going to hire a handful of part-time guys. So we go up there and, you know, we wrestle as the Headbangers and stuff like that. And, you know, we go out there. We had a really good match. We come back and Cornette's like, you know, they loved it, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, eventually we got signed, you know, as one of the guys for the part-time contract. And we loved our part-time contract because we were in just TV, so we were gone just Monday and Tuesday, and all of our expenses were covered. So we absolutely, totally loved it. And it was, we found out later that Shane McMahon was a huge Marilyn Manson fan. You know, he had Marilyn Manson books in his office and up at Titan Towers and stuff like that. And it was interesting, and
I don't know if you remember the time when there was these little things called beepers, and Glenn and I we had a beeper that we shared because it had an 800 number, so people could call us and leave us messages, and then we had to figure out a way to call them back. But we're driving back from Michigan, and we were in West Virginia, and the beeper went off, and we pulled over, and it was a message from Cornette to call him back. So we pull over to payphone, and it's raining, and we're standing in a puddle around the payphone, and Cornette gets on the phone, and he goes, "Hey boys," he goes, "I got some news for you." He said, just got out of Vince's office. He goes, I went into Vince and, you know, pitched you guys to get you guys a tryout because we're going to be up in Hartford, up in Connecticut, and to get you guys a tryout. And Vince was in a good mood. And Vince said, well, tell me about him. And he said, well, you know who they are. It's Glenn and Chaz. You know, they've come up as the Spiders. They've been up here a lot. And Vince was like, oh, yeah, I know who they are. You don't need to have them do a tryout. Just put them on the part-time contract. So that's how we found out that we were getting on that part-time contract, which was unbelievable. I mean, our first WrestleMania, which was WrestleMania 13 in Chicago, we were still part-time, and we went over. And then I think we were the only part-time guys that got signed to a full-time deal.
And at that time, well, I was going to say real quick, so at that time, you said how it was in the other locker rooms you were in. How was it in that locker room? How were you accepted, and what was the atmosphere like?
It was kind of the same. It was kind of the same because from us going up there and doing jobs for 3 years, I mean, Glenn going there longer than me. I mean, at this point, I started in June of 93. The first time I went to WWE TV was July of 93. This was November of 96. So the guys kind of knew who we were. So it was a very welcoming atmosphere for us when we got there.
Was that your experience too, Thrasher?
Yeah, I mean, That's 100%. I mean, they knew who we were and stuff like that. And, you know, we already knew most of the guys that before we even went up there, and it was an extremely welcoming locker room. It was a big. I tell everybody like the locker room up there when it was WWF at the time, it felt like a big family. Everybody knew where their spot was. We knew we weren't the main event and stuff like that. We knew we were, you know, opening match, mid-card guys and everything. Everybody knew what their job was. you know, our job was to beat WCW in the ratings. And that's what we did every single week. We wanted to see who our segment was up against and everything else. So I mean, that, the locker room to me was very, very family oriented. It felt like a family.
And at that time, a part-time contract was, so you do TV Monday and Tuesday, and then what? You could do like any other outside independent shows that you wanted to do?
Yeah, we could do anything we did. We were at every TV. We're allowed to do whatever we want. But after probably, I'd say, I don't know, a month or two of just doing TVs, we started doing house shows. And then we were doing all the house shows. Right. And the great part, again, the great part about our contract was it was a flat fee for TV and all of our expenses were paid. So then we went on the road. All of our expenses were still being paid. Plus, we were getting the cut of the house shows again. So it was working out really well for us.
And then what made your part-time contract a full-time contract? What was the turning point?
We got merchandise. So they started making T-shirts. They made the action figures. So Bruce Pritchard came up to us and he said, hey, he goes, here, we got full-time contracts for you guys. So we kind of looked at him and I took it home, looked at it, and went back to TV next week. And I go, Bruce, this really isn't a good contract for us. And he's like, what do you mean? You guys have been asking for 9 months now to be full time. And what, you don't want to sign a 3-year deal? I go, no, I'll sign a 10-year deal. It's not the term of the deal. The problem was this for us, the full time guys only got, say, $100 for TV. We were getting $500 for TV plus all of our expenses were paid. So I said, if we go to $100 per TV plus we have to pay expenses, we're losing money. I said, can't you just take our part-time deal, make it a 3-year deal and throw the merchandise into it? And he goes, I don't know. Let me see. So he came back the next week at TV and that's what they did. They customized our contract.
That's
which was kind of ballsy for us to do considering we had no leverage.
Considering, you know,
go ahead, Thrasher.
I totally agree. It was very, I mean, because at that time, you know, it was at the height of the Attitude Era and everything else like that. And we were just like, hell, why not? We should try it. Let's see what happens. So we got them all on a good day. So, yeah, it was all good.
So I do want to talk about Bruce Pritchard a little bit. He's someone that Robbie's worked with and I've worked with, and we all know Bruce. And Bruce was paired up with you guys. It seems like they didn't know exactly what to do with you at first, because they changed you into the Flying Nuns and put you with Bruce Pritchard for a little bit as Brother Love. Mosh, what was that pitch like and what was the reasoning? Did you think that was going to be a permanent change, like you're now the Flying Nuns?
No, they just came up to us and said, hey, we have this idea. There was for the Shotgun Saturday Nights, they wanted to use us on all the Shotgun Saturday Nights because they were in New York. We were local, so they didn't have to pay trans, which was fine with us. But no, it was just kind of pitched to us, hey, this is something we want you guys to do. And at that point, we were like, okay, you know, it's going to get us work. It's going to get us shoes. And I think the biggest thing is, looking back, is Vince likes to create his own characters. So when we came as the Headbangers, it wasn't his creation.
Yeah,
I think he was just trying something on his own, you know, to create something different with us. And it wasn't pitched to us as a short term thing. It was pitched to us as, hey, this is a thing. They sunk money into it. You know, they sent us up to New York a couple of times to get the outfits made. And so I think it was supposed to be something that was going to stay a little longer. But then a bunch of other stuff started happening behind the scenes and stuff like that. So it ended up getting squashed, which was either way was fine with us.
See, and I kind of remember somebody talked, I think it was Bruce, what they were going to do is they were going to just tie the Headbangers in together with the Flying Nuns, going, look, these guys are so crazy, they don't care, you know, what they're wearing, they just want to fight, and, you know, beat people up and stuff like that. So they'll dress as nuns, they'll dress, you know, as heavy metal people, they just don't care.
Well,
so, like Chad said, we didn't care, you know, what the gimmick was. You know, it was a Vince idea. You know, Vince went with us doing some promos and stuff like that. And so it was something that we were like, all right, well, Vince is into it. It's going to be pushed. So
you guys have been paired together since you started wrestling. You know, you have to get along. You work together. Out of the two of you, Mosh, who's the one who talks to Vince the most? Who's the one who deals with the people in the upper management at WWE? Is that you or is that Thrasher?
It was probably both of us. We kind of always did it together, and we never really dealt with Vince. We always dealt with either JR or Bruce, probably more Bruce than JR. But it was always both of us going them together. It was never one of us doing it separately. So it was always kind of together. And probably back then, it probably would have been Glenn doing more of the talking, because I was still kind of always looked at myself as more of the green guy, and Glenn had the experience. I would kind of let him talk more than I did back then. Now it's a little bit different.
Now it's a lot different.
Because you guys were there, and I mean, obviously, when I was in, I'm not trying to age any of us, but I mean, I was probably in middle school when I watched the Bret Hart documentary like 50 times, Wrestling with Shadows. And I remember you guys being backstage when it all went down. What was your take on the whole scene of that night?
Go ahead. I'll tell you my recollection. Go ahead.
Hey, Matt, so do you invest money?
You know, Robbie, I never have, but I think you know about this too. I just started using the Robinhood app, and the Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free.
Yeah, it really is awesome because they strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy people. So it works perfect for every human being.
You know, and for me, it's easy to be intimidated to go into the stock market, but it's a non-intimidating way for the stock market newcomers like me and you to invest for the first time with true confidence.
Yeah, it's clear design with data presented in an easy to digest way, which means even Robbie E can understand it.
And you know, if Robbie E is using it, it's easy to use. But what I liked about it is I never know what kind of money's involved in these kind of things. And I guess other brokerages cost up to like charge up to $10 for every trade. But Robinhood doesn't charge you commission fees. You trade stocks and keep all of your profits.
Yep. So you could do what me and Matt did, and you could sign up for free. Zero, zilch, nothing.
And, you know, if you're like Robbie and you need something that's easy to use, it is easy to use, and you learn by doing. You learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. You discover new stocks and track favorite companies with personalized news feeds, and they have custom notifications for price movements, so you never miss the right moment to invest.
So guys, Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. All you got to do is sign up at ended.robinhood.com. That's ended.robinhood.com.
For free. You have nothing to lose. Sign up today. ended.robinhood.com.
Go ahead. I'll tell you my recollection. Go ahead.
It was funny because that whole thing with Brett and stuff like that, we were actually getting dressed in that same locker room that night. And I think we were out front or something like that, and we saw Vince walk in to the locker room. And then, I don't know, a couple minutes later, maybe 5 minutes later, we saw him walk out, and he just had that dazed, confused look on his face. And then we went in, and we saw, you know, we were like, what the hell is going on? And then, you know, of course, we found out. At least that's what I remember. My memory's not as good as Chad's, because that's why he's the one writing the book and not me.
No, I mean, that was basically it. I remember we were over at Gorilla, and it was like kind of, it was over, and we were all, everyone sitting around Gorilla with the finish was kind of like, wow, okay, what just happened? And then I remember we were in that locker room. We went back again. Vince came walking out, and it was like real quiet, and it was kind of weird and eerie. And we walked in the locker room, and we kind of saw the aftermath of everything, not really knowing exactly what happened until obviously we found out very quickly.
Did you guys believe that Sean had nothing to do with it and didn't know ahead of time and everything?
I mean, at that point, I didn't really know what to believe, and with the politics of stuff, we kind of stayed away from all that. And so I didn't really have a clue. And didn't have a clue whatsoever.
Yeah, we were never like the politic type of guys. We were never, you know, going up and saying, oh, look, this one, or this did that, or anything else like that. We just, you know, we hung out with the guys in the locker room. If somebody was playing dominoes or cards, and we were you know, trying to get in to play dominoes and cards. And, you know, if Brett had the you know, blade there and his, and beans there, we were hanging out with the kids and playing with the kids. It, I mean, that's the environment that it had up there then. It wasn't, we were so far removed from the politics part of the locker room. It was probably one of the things that we probably should have.
Yeah, but so far away from it, realizing now, hearing years later, how many times the New Age Outlaws were supposed to drop the belts to us, and Road Dogg went in to Vince's office or Russo's office and had him change the finish and stuff like that. I mean, so far removed from even knowing that was an option. We were at the point where, hey, this is what we want you to do. Here's what we have in mind. And going, okay, like, no big deal. Whatever you want us to do, that's what we're going to do. Having no idea that we could go in and pitch ideas and pitch different finishes and stuff like that. I mean, that's how far separated we were from, hey, we're here happy to have a job, and whatever you need us to do, that's what we're going to do.
And it even got to one point, you know, that we were just so happy. They told us, hey, we really don't have anything for you guys to do. We're going to pull you off the road, and we're going to just have you set on doing, like, promotions and stuff like that. We were like, whatever you want us to do. We're happy to do whatever you guys need us to do. There's even one time that JR came to us and said, hey, you remember the minis when they had like Mini Vader and Mini Taker and stuff like that? Hey, I need you to drive all the midgets around. So we did. We just forgot to feed them.
Well, they're not dogs, right? I mean, come on.
No. Chaz told that story way better than I do. But yeah.
Look, they didn't speak English. Yeah, and they didn't speak English. It wasn't our fault.
So you basically had non-English-speaking little people held prisoner, and you're starving them to death in your car.
Well, here's kind of the long part of that story is we had a minivan to drive around the minis, and we you know, back then we had some different things to smoke in the vehicle. And on the way back, and the minis happened to enjoy it also. And that smoke actually turned the back of the car into a mini ring. And so we had six midgets, if that's politically correct to say, in the back beating the shit out of each other. So literally it was probably, yeah. Oh no, I'm not saying it was a bad thing. So probably the fifth or sixth day, I was driving back and I look over at Glenn and I go, I'm hungry. I need some food. And all of a sudden you heard this because they're all Mexican. They didn't speak any English in the back. And we turn around and look and they're all pointing. They were all pointing to their mouths. And then it dawned on us. I looked at them. I looked at Glenn. I go, they haven't eaten. Cause we would pick them up at the hotel. Cause we stayed at different hotels. So we'd pick them up at the hotel at, you know, 3-4 o'clock. We'd go to the arena a couple hours away. We drive back. We drop them off. Hey, we'll see you tomorrow. So we did the only thing we knew we could do. They're Mexican. We took them to Taco Bell. So I thought we were fair with that.
True story.
And then so we dropped them back off at the hotel that night. And we walked into the lobby and we asked the receptionist, we're like, have they ordered food or anything? They're like, no, they stood at the vending machine and would stare at it. That's what they did. Because not realizing they didn't speak English. They had no money. They had no nothing. So it was awesome.
Well, you can't starve the minis. I mean, we know that. That's a basic rule of wrestling. But let me go back to this real quick. So what you're saying is you're in a minivan with the Mini Vader and the Mini, you know, Mankind, and you guys are getting high, and they're having mini lucha matches in the back of the van.
Oh my God, it was hilarious.
We shared this cigarweed with him. We weren't selfish with that. We, you know, we shared the cigarweed with him, which is probably worse, which made him hunger.
And I mean, they only take small hits, so it's fine.
Right, exactly.
Wasn't wrestling so much cooler in the 90s than it is now?
Well, you know what? You know what made it cooler, though, to be totally honest with you, was no social media. No phones, no social media. Because, I mean, yeah, half the shit we did back then, we'd probably still be in jail for now.
Yeah, because you would have to live stream that match. You'd have to live stream that match in the back of the van.
Oh, that would have been all over YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Oh, yeah.
So looking back on it, though, you know, it's we've interviewed a lot of wrestlers from this time, and it seems like you could go in the point where you guys were, and a lot of guys were, where we go along with the flow. We're glad to be there. We're glad for the gig. We'll do whatever needs to be done. Then you have the guys who are good at politicking, and then you have the guys who are bad at politicking. So looking back on it, Chaz, do you have any regrets about the way you handled yourself backstage, or you think that was pretty much the way to do it?
No, I mean, that was the way I was brought up in the business to do it, was to just do as you're told and, you know, shut your mouth and open your ears. I mean, looking back, I don't know if it's a regret, but if I had to do it all over again, yeah, there's a couple of things I would do differently, but I don't have any regrets. Absolutely. I don't have any regrets on it. Maybe what I've opened our mouths a little more about doing different things. Yeah, like when they put D'Lo and I together. And D'Lo and I have spoken about this. So I don't have a problem saying it, but we probably would have said no to the stupid turbans. Like looking back, but at that point with the turbans and with Tiger Ali Singh, they were spending so much money on him. We were like, oh, we can get a push out of this. Stuff like that. I probably would have done the Marianne thing different when they were bringing Glenn back. I probably would have incorporated her more into us, knowing how much at that point. Looking back, realizing how much at that point they were using the ladies and the women's and pushing the groups that had them. So little stuff like that I probably would have done differently. But again, back then, I didn't know any better.
So, we're going to get to the turbans because we interviewed D'Lo and he said the exact same thing, dude. He's like, love Chaz to death, but fuck those turbans. They were terrible.
Yeah.
But, let me ask you this. When you, at Ground Zero in your house, you find out that you're going to become the tag team champions, Glenn Thrasher, what was your reaction? Do you remember being told what your reaction was?
Let me tell the story because he's going to fuck it up.
Yeah.
Right? Glenn, do you agree with that?
That's fair. I do.
So here's what happened. As you know, Stone Cold and Dude Love were tag champs. And Stone Cold, you know, broke his neck. So they were out. So we found out, I don't know, maybe a week before that, hey, you know, a few days before that, hey, you guys are taking their spot in that match. Hell yeah. Tag match, you know, on a pay-per-view for the titles, we're in. So we get to TV in Louisville, and Cornette comes up to us. He goes, boys, come take a walk. I got to talk to you. We're like, okay. So he takes us all the way downstairs.
We're in trouble.
He takes us all the way downstairs into the parking garage, and he says, all right. He goes, so you guys are going over tonight. We're like, what? He goes, you guys are winning tonight. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And he's like, you're winning the tag team titles tonight. And we're like, okay, that's cool. And he's like, I brought you guys down here so you could jump around like idiots, so you don't jump around like idiots in front of everybody in the locker room. So we were like, okay, so all three of us started jumping up and down and dancing together and we were winning the tag belts. So then we get up in the meeting, and I think it was Lanza was the agent.
Lanza, yeah.
And he said, okay, LOD and the Godwins are going to kind of spill out. And then instantly my hand just went over my mouth because I started smiling. And so we get through what the finish was. And I was like, all right, cool. And it was so funny because Owen looks right over at me and directly in the eyes, he goes, Chaz, it's okay to smile. You can smile. I know inside you're like turning right now. So go ahead and smile. So I started laughing. So that's kind of how we found out. It was awesome. They all knew how we were. Yeah. I mean, there was a time when Owen said to us, hey, I need a ride to the next town. Oh, can I jump in with you guys? We're like, fuck yeah, it's Owen Hart. Like, of course you can ride with us. So then we get to the hotel and he goes, yeah, I don't have a hotel either. Do you mind if I crash on your floor? And we're like, well, you can sleep in our room, but you're Owen Hart. You're not sleeping on the floor. So of course we give him one of the beds and one of us slept in a chair or the floor or something. So the next morning we get up and Owen's in the shower. And this is when he was tag champ and European champ. So he gets his bag out. Yeah. So he's got everything. He's laying everything out. He's got the tag belt here. He's got the European title here. He's got the slammy here. He's got his clothes on. So he goes in the shower. So we walk over like two little kids and we're like looking at the belts. So we pick up, I grab the tag belt. I'm jumping up and down on the bed. I throw it to Glenn. He's jumping up and down the bed. All of a sudden, the shower goes off. We run over. We put the belt back down, and we're just sitting there. As Owen comes out, and he walks out with the towel around his waist. He looks at both of us. He goes, "You touched my tag belt, didn't you?" We're like, "Yeah, we did."
Matt, that was great.
So he.
He knew he was going to do something like that when he went into the shower.
Which is why when he was going over, we were going over to tag match, why I threw that in, because he knew how we were. And he knew how excited we were going to be about everything. So, yeah, it was awesome.
He probably left the tag belts out on purpose, no? Maybe.
I'm guessing the way he laid everything out. Yeah, the way he laid everything out, he definitely did it on purpose. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you guys, so you're, this is, I mean, the greatest point so far in your career, right? You're WWF, whatever it was at the time, tag champions. What, I mean, from there, what happened with the Headbangers where you guys eventually weren't the Headbangers anymore?
Well, I guess shortly after that, I guess it was in 99 where I went down, we were wrestling against D'Lo and Mark Henry. And, Mark Henry was so big and so strong. I mean, he's still so big and so strong.
And but, so green.
You know, at that time.
Yeah, at so, that time, he was beyond, he was greener than the dog shit.
But the spot was, I was supposed to duck a clothesline. I was going to do a flying crossbody. He was going to catch me, and that's it. So, I mean, you know, when you throw a clothesline, you know the guy's ducking. You kind of rainbow it just a little. Not Mark. He went from about shoulder height down to his knee, and he clipped me with his big giant clubbing forearms on the top of the head and knocked me totally out. And then when I went down, I dislocated my knee, and it came out. And then when I got up, it popped back in. So he picked me up, and we kept going. Here, about another month later, my ACL was torn and my meniscus was torn, so I was out for 9 months with surgery.
So,
and you know, Robbie, you know, when you have, you know, an injury like that and everything else. Now, this was my first really big injury with a surgery and stuff like that. So, in the process of coming back, you know, medical advances are so far now, and technology and stuff like that. Back then, it was like, you know, you sat in the couch for you know, 6 weeks and you did nothing and everything else. So I took advantage of it. I gained a little bit of weight. And so the whole thing with Owen happened and stuff like that. And we went up for a funeral, and you know, I was told that I was going to be coming back soon and stuff like that. I got clearance. And, Russo was like, "You got to drop some weight. You're entirely too heavy." I think I was like 20 pounds overweight. So I dropped the weight.
20?
And I came back.
Wait, 20? Did you say only 20?
But on one leg. It was 20.
Oh, yeah. Okay, one leg. Got it. Yeah. That's fair. So, I mean, go ahead.
So, you know, coming back and everything else, it was just I tried to wear a brace, and then I couldn't wear a brace. I was so afraid. I wasn't running the way I used to run. I wasn't, you know, being the same way I was in the ring. So Bruce is like, "You know what? Let's send you down to Memphis and stuff like that." That was back when, you know, before they had, you know, the training center that they have now. So I went down to Memphis for a while, and that's when Chaz was doing the other stuff. So go ahead.
Yeah, the crazy part about it is how they told us it was going on, because that was the whole time they put the cones on us. I think with the cones and all, Vince was just messing with us. But anyway, so we're standing at TV looking at the run sheet, and it says lowdown. And I remember it was D'Lo, Glenn, and I. We were all looking at the sheet together, and we're like, "Who the hell is lowdown?" And Shane walks by, and he goes, "Oh, no one told you?" And we said, "No." And he goes, "Oh, Chaz, you and D'Lo are a new tag team." And Glenn was like, and we all just kind of sit there, and Glenn goes, "What am I doing?" He goes, "I don't know." He goes, "I think you got to talk to Bruce." And literally the three of us just stood there. And it was probably one of the most awkward moments I've ever had in my life, especially when we were 3 hours from home, and Glenn and I had to drive back together after they said, "You know, you guys are split up, and Chaz, you're now part of Lowdown."
Let me take.
And Robbie, here's the funniest thing, Robbie. Who trained both of them? Me. I trained D'Lo too. I trained D'Lo too. Yes, I got D'Lo into the business and everything else. him and a bunch of his friends used to come down to the Monster Factory and rent out the ring and put on their own little your backyard wrestling shows and stuff like that. And I talked D'Lo into joining up into school because D'Lo had all the moves and stuff like that. He just didn't have, you know, the smarts and the ring and the philosophy of everything. And,
I can't even imagine how weird that must have been for you guys. Fuck.
Yeah, it was a little awkward.
It was really weird, but then when I went and I talked to Bruce and everything else, he's like, listen, he goes, you know, you got to get, you know, back into where you were and everything else. And I told him, and I was honest with Bruce. I was like, you know, listen, I don't know how to get over not thinking about it because I was so self-conscious about my knee and about hurting it again and everything else that it just stuck to my head and I could never get it back out. And I went down to Memphis and I kept trying and they brought me back up again. And, you know, and then that's when it was just like, hey, it's not just going to work out, you know? And it was kind of like I talked to Bruce and it was like, you know, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to run and be the same way I was before because I can't get this out of my mind. It was horrible.
And do you think if you didn't mention that so much, like if you didn't tell them that, then they probably would have wanted to do more, right? It's because you were telling them that you were, you know, losing confidence.
Did we lose him?
I think we lost him for a second.
Did we lose Glenn?
I'm here.
Oh, so Robbie was saying that do you think that you mentioning Hello? The, can you hear us? Test, Glenn. You still there, Glenn? Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yes.
Hey, so let me take you guys back. We went to the breakup real quick, but there's a couple things I want to go over real quick. I remember watching that Attitude Era wrestling, and you guys had a crucial role, I believe, in helping the New Age Outlaws become the tag team, you know, that they were to become. You know, they were two guys who were thrown together, who, you know, were kind of nowhere at that point in their careers. But it was matches against you guys that really established them. Mosh, you mentioned Road Dogg before. How do you feel the Headbangers, first of all, were looked at as a commodity or as a tag team? And do you guys feel you're kind of overlooked as far as helping get a tag team like New Age Outlaws to where they were?
No, we were a huge part of that. And That was kind of our spot. Our spot was they knew they could have us lose every single night. We could go out there and we could lose every single night. We could get the shit beat out of us. It didn't matter because we were still over with the fans. We were still over as baby faces, no matter what we did, because they tried, and Cornette used to get so pissed when they would try to turn us heel because he goes, there's no way they're ever going to turn you guys heel because your characters and your personalities are so over and the fans have connected with you. So we were a huge part of that. Like they would bring in Doug and Phil and, you know, they'd have us try to work good matches with them, but we could go out there and we could work pretty much any style with any tag team and get that tag team over while still keeping ourselves over. So that was kind of our spot and we kind of knew it and we kind of embraced it and just went with it. And whenever we got a chance to do something a little bit better or shine, then that's what we were there for. And then we had such good synergies with Billy and Road Dogg. You know, the matches were just easy, especially working with Billy's talent. I mean, you know, he's probably one of the most talented guys I've ever seen in the ring.
And like the biggest. 100%. You don't realize how big he is, right?
Well, and the worst part about his size is every time I see him, I think he grows 4 inches. Literally everywhere on his body, his arms, his chest, and his height, he just constantly grows.
He's bigger now than ever.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember when we first started going up there, when they were doing the smoking guns, he would get in the ring and would just run and jump and land on the top rope like it was no big deal. I mean, we did charity basketball games against, like, I don't know, like single A or triple A basketball teams or whatever in New York, and he was dunking on those guys. The athletic ability he has is crazy. But to answer your original question, yeah, we knew our spot. Our spot was to help get these other teams over, and that's kind of the funny part is that's how those part-time contracts started. So that was our job from the start, was to build us up to a certain point. That was the whole idea of those part-time guys, was to build us up to a certain point to give the top guys competitive matches on TV. So it was always kind of our role, and we never really elevated above that, only because we were so over all the time. It didn't really matter.
Hey, so Glenn, when you were hurt and you saw the Beaver cleavage thing going down, what was your thoughts on?
It was funny because, I mean, it's not like we didn't still talk, and, you know, he would come home from the road, he would come over, see how I was, and we would talk about it. We always thought it was funny because he has to tell you the story how he got that name, because that wasn't just by coincidence. That was on purpose. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So there's a better story behind that whole Beaver cleavage gimmick than meets the eye. So, but, I mean, how could I be upset? I mean, you know, we were together and we're still together. You know, you always, you know, want the best for the person that you're with. And if it's not, you know, with you while you're out hurt, as long as they're, you know, they were still paying them. They were going to pay both of us to sit home. You know, at that time we had guaranteed contracts. So, you know, we went from the part-time contracts to our regular contracts where we didn't have any guarantee to our guaranteed contracts. So we were on our third contract, and it was like, you know, I was being paid to stay home to rehabilitate, and they had to find something to do with him to make it business sense.
And Chaz, a lot of people look at that Beaver cleavage thing as maybe the very worst of WWE in that time. When you look back at it, you know, it sounds like a Russo deal, right? So what was the pitch? What was your reaction? What did you think when they explained you're basically a little kid in love with his own mother? And what the hell were you told?
Well, I love the story. Go ahead.
How the whole idea actually came up was the very first time I was ever overseas, we were going to Kuwait. And this was in, I don't know, April of 97. And Jerry Briscoe was one of the agents, and he grabs my passport. And now, meanwhile, here, this is 97. My passport was from, I don't know, 8 or 9 years before that. So I was like 19 or 20. And he looks at it and he starts laughing. And I'm like, what's so funny? He goes, you look like Leave It to Beaver in this picture. So from that day forward, Jerry Briscoe called me the Beave every single time. It was either son or Beave, because we ended up calling him Dad. We ended up building such a great relationship with him. He was like a father figure to us on the road. So it was either son or it was the Beave. So what ended up happening was Bruce called me up, Pritchard, and he said, hey, he goes, we got this idea, a singles idea we want to bring you back for. He said, so we're going to do this thing where you're going to be, we want you to grow your hair out. He goes, Glenn's going to do this evil Doink the Clown thing when he's ready to come back. He goes, but we think you guys have kind of went where you could go with the Headbangers, and we want to bring you back. And so we have this idea with this Leave It to Beaver thing. And I'm like, all right, Leave It to Beaver. What do you mean? So he said, well, we got this girl, she's a fitness model. He said, we want to do these vignettes. He goes, but basically, long story short, we're going to be insinuating that you're having sex with your mother. And I went, oh,
who doesn't want that? Okay.
I said, okay. I said, so you're bringing me back and I'm going to start working? And he's like, yeah. And I went, okay. And my initial thought was, I was kind of torn. My initial thought was, this is great. I've never done anything singles except for the first 3 or 4 matches when I first started down the Monster Factory. So this will be a great learning experience for me. You know, I can do some single stuff. It's time for me to kind of maybe make a name on my own and, you know, kind of do my own thing. But at the same time, it was scary as hell because my crutch was gone. Glenn was always my crutch. When I would get lost in the ring, I could just tag out and get out. So now it was like, shit, what am I going to do? Like, Glenn and I traveled on the road all those years before together, and now I'm going to have to travel by myself. So as exciting as it was scary at the same time. But I think the excitement was a little bit more than the scary part.
So was the Beaver cleavage deal, was that a Bruce Pritchard idea or was the Vince Russo idea?
I think it was a combination of the two. I think it was more of Russo. When we did the vignettes, it was Russo that was there, like leading the vignettes, which doing the vignettes were so much fun. And the funny part is people are like, oh my God, that was so awful. Like, you had to hate doing that. I was like, my head was buried in a woman's chest every single night. How bad do you think I had it?
But how bad do you think I had it? And of course, they pulled the plug abruptly in such a way to completely bury it, and on screen, you know, what was that like? It must have been somebody just came to their senses and said, "We are abandoning ship." How did that come about, and what was your reaction?
No, actually, what ended up happening was that was right after Owen's accident, and then it was right when Sable had filed some kind of sexual harassment suit against Vince or against the company or something like that. I don't remember the exact specifics of it. But it was right around those two things happening. So if you look back, anything that was sexual or pushing the line to that, they scratched all of it. So at that point, that's when they pulled the plug. And I showed up at TV. I'll never forget. It was in Memphis. TV was in Memphis. And I'll never forget it. They were like, "Here's what we're doing." And I was like, you're killing it. I'm like, we did all these vignettes, which are hysterical. I had one match, which was great. Like Beaver Cleavage is still undefeated. I'm like, and that's it? And they're like, "Yeah, no, we're killing it off." And I was like, "So what am I going to do?" And they're like, "We'll figure it out." So that's,
yeah, but that's when we did the pre-TV.
Yeah. So they did the pre-tape. And I did the pre-tape, and then I said, "You can go home." I was actually home before Raw came on air that night. That's how early we did that pre-tape of me walking off. And then I got the TV the next week, and they said, "Yeah, you're just going to be Chaz, a kid from New Jersey with your girlfriend, and you're just here to, looking to have a good time." And I had no gear. I had no nothing because I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't have any singles gear. All my gear was headbanger stuff. And I was like, "Well, can I just go back to being Mosh then, because I know that character?" And they're like, "No, you're just Chaz. You're a kid from New Jersey," which is the only thing I had in my bag that I could wear that would be halfway decent was boxer shorts with a big smiley face on it. So that's where those came from too.
It's so crazy. They wouldn't have, like, you know, tried to tell you a day or two ahead of time so you could prepare like an outfit or something, you know?
Nope. Found out at TV that day. That's what I was doing.
Were you happy though? Like, did you feel that would work better for you than doing the Beaver Cleavage thing?
No, I think the Beaver Cleavage thing would have been better and easier because it was a character. It was something. There was a way for me to act, to go out there and act like a big stupid kid where I'm in love with my mother and I'm having sex with my mother and everything I do is to make my mother happy, so make sure I can have sex with her later on.
It's a tale as old as time, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but it was a direction. Chaz, a kid from New Jersey who's just here to have fun. There was no direction. There was nothing. I didn't know what to do because it was like when they split Glenn and I up, and that first night, I'll never forget it. I'm getting ready to go through the curtain with D'Lo, and I had my earrings in, and D'Lo and I didn't know what to wear. So we had Nike pants on. It was the only thing we had that matched. And Bruce looks at me. He goes, "Take your earrings out." And I said, "What?" He goes, "Take your earrings out. That's headbangers." And I'm like, "But that's me. Like, the earrings are me." And he goes, "No." He goes, "You have to do nothing headbanger. Do not do anything headbangerish out there." And I stood there and I turned around and looked at D'Lo and I went, and Bruce said to me, "Just go be Chaz." And I turned around and looked at D'Lo. I go, "Who the fuck is Chaz? There is no Chaz. Chaz right. was a kid from New Jersey who just got done having sex with his mother. Like, I don't know what to do here." So it was kind of the same thing. I had no idea what to do. So, it was all kind of trying to figure it out on it right there on the spot.
And I mean, you know, I mean, eventually they found a character for you. They turned you into someone who beat up his girlfriend, which I'm sure wasn't that great either. Meanwhile, Glenn, you've got maybe a chance to be a Doink reboot, or also there's talk that you were with GTV. Where's your career at this time while Chaz is getting all these wonderful opportunities as a...
It was funny because it was pitched to me that when Chaz was doing that whole Beaver Cleavage thing and I was going to come back from surgery, I was, you know, what happened was is I was going to be with Bruce Pritchard. He was going to be like that Wham guy on TV. You remember that Wham guy that we, "Yeah, look, Wham, and this is great, and this is wonderful, and buy this for $29.99. It's the best thing going." So Bruce was supposed to be going out and collecting items and stuff like that around the ringside. And if you remember back then, he would just walk out and he would just grab an item and he would just walk back. So the whole premise of the thing was going to be he was going to be with me as my manager, and I was going to be like the sick clown of Doink, the sick side of Doink. And then I was going to use these items in the match, and then he'd sell them off and stuff like that. So I thought it was a good idea. Bruce Pritchard pitched it to me, and he was like, we're going to be together. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. I think this is a good thing to get you away from the whole headbanger thing and everything else. And, when you come back, this is what we're going to do. So I was great.
Well,
so happy to have a job. Whatever you guys need me to do, that's fine.
And I mean, Bruce Pritchard as Billy Mays sounds amazing. I know Bruce, and I think you'd
hilarious.
Right. That is him. He'd be fantastic at it. But meanwhile, you're making these spotty appearances. Mosh, how are you feeling about your friend and also where your career is now, going through that gimmick that you and D'Lo both said you hated, the lowdown gimmick, and also, Beaver Cleavage, and also Chaz, the guy without any identity. How are you feeling about where your career is right now, Mosh?
At what point? You mean when I was by myself with the girl or when they split Glenn and I up?
When you're with the girl.
When I was with her, I was like, okay, whatever. I got to try and figure this out. But our personalities, when it was just came to be, because again, she had no experience. So she had no direction. She didn't know what to do. And our personalities didn't really mesh. And I just couldn't get along with her for some reason. So they came up with the idea of the me beating her up thing, the split us up, with the whole angle of Glenn coming out and exposing her cheating on me, the GTV thing, her cheating on me really not beating her up, her setting up. So that's kind of where the angle went, was for us to come back. But then Glenn came back, like he said, so badly out of shape and not feeling comfortable, not really being able to move. That's when they came back and they were like, all right, great, Headbangers are back. But then after that, they kind of squashed us back down, which was kind of disappointing because that's right when the tag scene really started taking off with the Hardys, Edge and Kristen, the Dudleys just came in. And when we first came in, all the tag teams were established. You had Owen and Davey Boy, you had the Godwins, LOD was coming back. So you had all these established tag teams. So we were kind of at the bottom of that totem pole working our way up. At that point, I felt as though we should have been at the top of that totem pole with Edge and Christian and Matt and Jeff and the Dudleys just coming in, but we weren't even in that mix at all. So it was kind of, I guess, disappointing at the same time.
And then
if that makes any sense.
No, it totally does. And then, so Thresher, you actually, Glenn, you got released first?
Yes.
And then was that something, because of your injury, were you expecting that or was it still out of the blue?
I really was. I was totally expecting it. And it was something that, me and Bruce had several conversations about it, before it actually happened and stuff like that. So when he finally did call me and everything else, and I was like, I totally understand. It was, I think it was right around either between Thanksgiving and Christmas. So is that the worst time of the year that you could possibly get released or get let go from anything, let alone, a job that you've worked your whole life to get to and stuff like that. And, I don't know if you understand what I mean, but it was the biggest. I was in such a bad depression. It was unbelievable. I mean, I don't want to say everything, but I lost all ability to go to a gym, work out, get in the ring again. I mean, everything. All my wrestling stuff was gone. I didn't step a foot in the ring after I got released, probably for 12 years before me and Chaz got back together about 8 years ago. So when I left WWF at that time, I totally left. I fell into a huge depression. I was drinking a lot. I ballooned up to 315 pounds. I mean, it was the biggest disappointment of my life. And and not only because I just lost this position, it was also because I knew I let Chaz down. When you're a tag team like that and stuff like that happens, you know that what happened to you also happened to somebody else. And it
yeah,
was,
and probably,
it
was, I mean, and probably one of the things I should have done. But again, even at this point of us being together so long, Glenn was always kind of the he was not kind of was he was the leader of us. I mean, he trained me. You know, I followed him around, and you know, he was kind of I looked up. He was my mentor. I looked up to him. So there was a lot of times when I would go over to his house when he was hurt, and he was sitting there with, a box of 20 nuggets on his belly and three double cheeseburgers from McDonald's crumpled up, empty wrappers on the floor. But at this point, they started making me a singles thing. So I was kind of like, well, okay, whatever. I know they want him to do this other thing and stuff like that. I don't know. Like, but at that point, I should have said to him, dude, what are you doing? Like, get off your ass. Like, let's get up. Let's go to the gym. Let's work out. But I never said anything to him. So again, that's probably something I would have done differently. I would do differently now. But yeah, it was just kind of hard to say something back then because I just didn't think it was my spot to, even though I probably should have.
And it was also funny too, because I mean, it was the biggest disappointment of my life and everything else. And I've had, another knee surgery since then. And I've had another, shoulder surgery since then. I was back in the ring 5 months after doing my second knee. And I never, ever missed a beat. And it was just something that, after a while, I grew to go, my knee's fine. I had surgery. It's fine. It's ridiculous.
So you think that was all in your head, looking back, all the knee stuff? Yeah. You think it was all just you built it up?
100%. All manufactured in my head and everything else. And I think that's why after all the years and everything else of thinking about it and just realizing that it was just something that I manufactured myself. It wasn't anything, for my knee was 100%. It was all in my head. It was 100% in my head.
That's It was a combination of that and the fact that we always had the impression that as long as we were good, stayed out of trouble, did whatever we asked, like we'd have jobs for. But clearly that wasn't the way it was supposed to. That's the way it worked out. But I think the combination of that also is that was always our thought. Like that's what we're always told, do the right thing, do what you're supposed to do, and you guys will be here for a long time.
And then Mosh, you hung on for a little bit. You tried these different singles pushes and some stuff happened, some stuff didn't. When did you get the call? When did you find out that your services weren't really needed there anymore?
What happened was, is April of, I guess it was 2001, Bruce called and said, hey, this is when they had Puerto Rico, Savio's League, or whatever it is, down there in Puerto Rico, and they were using it as kind of like a farm team. And he said, we're going to send you and D'Lo down there to help you guys get back into ring shape, because we had been off since January, because we're probably the only team in the history of wrestling who was ever taken off the road because their manager got hurt. That's when we were at Tiger Ali Singh and we did a handicap match against the Dudleys, and Bubba clotheslined the shit out of Tiger over the top rope, and Tiger, I don't know, hit his head and had a concussion or something. So they took D'Lo and I off the road, which is a totally different conversation. But they said, hey, we're going to send you down to Puerto Rico, get you guys back in ring shape, and then bring you guys back up to get ready for TV. And I argued for a week to try to send us to OVW instead, because OVW is where Cornette was. Plus it was, in the mainland. It wasn't, overseas. So they sent us down there and we did our thing down there. And then they brought me back up to TV. And I want to probably say July or August. And they did TV and had me do a dark match. And then after the dark match, the next night was in Philly. The next night was in Baltimore. And I walked into JR's office and said, hey, what about bringing me back up to the roster? And that's when he said, well, creative doesn't know what to do with you. So therefore, we're not going to redo your contract. Now, meanwhile, my contract wasn't up until that January. And I said, what do you mean creative doesn't know what to do with me? You've given me 17 different gimmicks and 17 different things to do. And I think I've done well in all of them, but you know who the headbanger is, you know who Mosh is. Like, let me come back as Mosh, is a singles character, as Mosh. And he's like, well, he goes, if you can come up with an idea, come up with some ideas. But as of now, just know we're not extending your contract unless creative can figure out who you are and to figure out to do something with you. So I sat home all that time pitching many different ideas, only to see those many different ideas unfold on TV with other people. And then at that point, I just knew when my contract was up that I wasn't being re-signed. So I kind of stopped pitching ideas. I mean, I did the idea of Jerry Briscoe won the hardcore title when Crash was sleeping. That was my idea. Another idea was when DDP came up and they put Christian with him as like his sidekick. That was my idea. But all those ideas were supposed to be me. So once I saw those ideas unfolding on TV with different people, I stopped sending in ideas.
And when you get released, Chaz, where is, you know, the relationship with you and Glenn at this time? Because you guys really did kind of disappear off the scene for about a decade before you came back and did some stuff with Ring of Honor. Did you guys stay in touch? Are you guys close? Or because of the circumstances, are there resentments? Like, where are the Headbangers as friends during this, you know, the early
2000s?
There was Let me answer that first. When my contract was when I left and I fell into that deep depression, I was drinking, I was off the wall. And so, yes, I lost touch with Chaz. I lost touch with my family. I lost touch with everybody. I went so far over the deep end. I was drowned in my own misery. So we lost tons of touch because Chaz moved down to Florida. I was still up north in New Jersey and stuff like that. I eventually, you know, left my wife, left my two older kids. I mean, this is how bad that of a depression that I got into. And it's so weird because you hear, you know, guys talk about, oh, I fell into a depression after I, you know, left WWF or WCW and stuff like that. And you're just like, how does that happen and everything else? Well, I can tell you it happened. And it happened so bad that I cut off, you know, the person that I was the closest with first. And it shouldn't have been like that. And, you know, the us losing touch and not talking for that 10 years is totally on me. And we've had many talks, me and Chaz, about that. That's why I wanted to address it first. And I've always told him that was my fault. That wasn't anything he did, that was on me.
So would you consider it a falling out, Chaz, or would you consider it more of just losing contact?
No, I wouldn't call it a falling out at all. I mean, a falling out is more you get into a fight or an argument. It was more of a disconnect, I guess, because I always tried to stay in contact with Glenn. I knew what he was going through because, you know, we were so close. I was so close with, you know, his wife at the time and the kids. I mean, his second daughter is my goddaughter. So through those years, I kind of stayed in contact with them off and on. So I guess it was more of a disconnect, but I always tried to reach out or somehow try to stay in touch because the last thing I ever wanted was for, you know, another 15 years go by and we're not talking and here somewhere where Glenn's like, oh yeah, I got released and Chaz just, you know, forgot who I was and, you know, stopped contacting me and, you know, went off to be a big superstar or whatever. You know, I brought him in, I trained him. Like, that was the last thing I never wanted to have that happen. So it was one of those things where, like Glenn said, he kind of just fell off and that was kind of it. And then I had a surprise 40th birthday party and my wife got in touch with him and had him come down for the party. And I mean, that was, you know, 7-8 years ago. You know, we've been basically in touch all the time since then. So it was kind of awesome.
What was your reason for not wrestling when you were done? Because you didn't do anything after WWE either, right?
Who, me? Yeah. Oh, I did. No, I did indie stuff here and there. I did. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I did little things here and there down here. It just was nothing on a grander stage. You know, the thing about our gimmick and us, you know, we're more valuable as a tag team than we are single. So for someone to book just one of us, it wasn't a big deal. So I just did a lot of local stuff down here in Florida just to stay in the ring, you know, every few months. And at that point, I didn't really care at all. You know, I was moving on with career wise. So if something came along, great. But when Glenn moved down and what happened was he moved down, he came down for the party. basically went home, packed up all his shit in Delaware, and literally just packed up and moved to Florida with nothing, no idea where he was going to stay or what he was going to do. And I did a show, and he came out to the show, and we ended up getting him involved. We ended up getting him involved in the match. And after the match, he goes, "There's no reason we're not doing more of these shows together." And I said, "Yeah, the reason we're not is you're 315 pounds. You barely could get to the ring. You couldn't even get into the ring." So that's when he was like, "You know what? You're right. I'm going to get back into shape." And that's when he went and lost all that weight. And that led to us doing more shows. And then, you know how the internet is now, you can totally recreate yourself on YouTube. And that's what we did by calling people out on YouTube videos. And Cornette came down, saw us, and expected us to be the drizzling shits. And that's why we ended up with that little spot in Ring of Honor and kind of just took off from there.
And so that leads us to a very surprise appearance in 2016. The Headbangers surprised everybody and appeared on SmackDown and were credible, were great. Like, I think everybody was surprised at how well you did and that you fit in this tag team tournament. Mosh, what was it like to get that call?
Well, it's kind of funny because
he's the one that got it first. Yeah.
As great as that was, it almost didn't happen. And the reason it almost didn't happen is I actually got a text from Road Dogg, and he's like, "Hey man," he goes, "are you and Glenn available?" Cause you know, we had seen him, you know, prior, you know, a year or so before he was back there full time and doing what he was doing. So we had worked like him and Billy on some indie shows and stuff. So he goes, "Are you and Glenn available to," this was on like a Thursday, "are you guys available on Tuesday for SmackDown?" And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, who is this?" Like, I'm thinking it's somebody ribbing me. And then he called me and he's like, "No, it's Brian, it's me." He goes, "You know, we want to bring you guys up. We got this idea, blah, 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 blah." So I'm like, "Dude, we're in." Like, because I've been asking him, and I was been trying to talk to Hunter for a while, because I have a 14-year-old son who's seen me do, I don't know, 1,000 indie shows, but he's never seen me in that, on that grand stage. And that's all I wanted, was for him one time to see me in that ring. And I've been asking, like, even house shows when they come down here to Sunrise and South Florida and stuff like that, to just get on a house show so he could see me. So Brian knew this. So he goes, "No, here's the idea." So then he calls me the next day and he goes, "Oh man," he goes, "I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "What?" He goes, "It was up in the casinos up in Connecticut. It's where it was supposed to be." He said, "If you're not on the full-time roster, you have to have blood work done to be able to work that building. And we won't have time to get your blood work done." So he goes, "We're going to try and hold the angle off for next week." He goes, "But I can't promise that." So I'm like, "All right, well, you know, is what it is. Thanks for thinking of us." But, and I'm thinking, okay, this isn't happening. So it was actually that next Friday when he called me and he goes, "Okay, you're in, you're going to Dallas. Somebody's going to call you from travel, blah, 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 blah." So, I mean, the excitement I had was through the roof. I mean, I hadn't been there in 15 years to be, you know, called to go back. And then the biggest thing for me was for my 12-year-old at that point to be able to see me back in that ring was beyond excitement. I can't even really put words to it, how awesome that was for me.
And then on my side, on the flip side, it was almost like a full circle for me, for being where I was, the 315 pounds, and being depressed, and, you know, losing my, you know, my two kids from my first marriage and stuff like that. And then, you know, moving all the way down, you know, 1500 miles south to try to do it again and try to get into shape, and not having a place to live, not having, you know, a job, and to have this happen, it was just like, this is fucking awesome. This is exactly, it couldn't have played any better for either one.
I think the excitement for both of us, the excitement for that day was probably just as high, if not maybe, I'll even say a little bit more than when we found out we got that first contract, standing in that puddle, talking on the phone. I mean, the idea of going back after 15 years, I mean, the nerves and the excitement were through the roof. And I think that was more exciting going back 2016 than probably that first match we had up in Hartford when we had our part-time contracts.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't, like you said, full circle, you can't get more of a happy ending than that. But when you went there, did you have the idea that it was
like Chinatown, Robbie?
did you think it was going to be a one-time thing, a few-time thing? Did you think it could turn into something full-time? Like, did you have any inkling?
We had no inkling at first. It was just come up. This is what we're doing. And, you know, that's kind of it. And then the really cool part was, is Heath and Rhino were like, hey, whatever you guys want to do. And we had, you know, our agent was there. Mike Rotundo was our agent. And he was like, hey, you know, whatever you guys want to do, go ahead and do. Just let me know what you're doing. Like, they kind of let us rule the match other than, you know, the beginning, the opening spot. We ran the whole thing. And then except for the finish, they said, here's what we're doing to finish. You guys, so they let us run everything, which was awesome. So we got to, you know, to do some stuff and have it fun. But after the match, Vince actually stood up at Gorilla and came over and thanked us. And he was like, that was amazing. He was like, you guys have never left. And Road Dogg was standing there and Road Dogg was like, oh, they're definitely going to bring you guys back, you know, for a couple more spots. He goes, I don't know when. He goes, but the excitement that was back here, he goes, because you guys fit right in. He goes, you're definitely going to be back. But then to get called back as quickly as we did two more times after that was awesome.
And so that go ahead.
The one time that was awesome for me, like Chaz was saying about, you know, his son and Ty, one of the next times was up in Newark, New Jersey. And, you know, we're both from New Jersey. So my oldest two daughters, who God at the time was 23 and 21 at the time, they were able to come up and see it live and see us walk out, you know, on that ramp and see it and everything else. They don't remember, well, my oldest one does, what it was like when they were hanging out backstage and, you know, playing hide and seek with China and coloring with Owen and, you know, riding on Steve's legs because they thought it was me from the back. And, you know, they don't really remember that. And just for them to be able to be a part and see it and stuff like that, it was awesome. It was really, really, it made everything for me.
Well, guys, thank you so much.
You got all sentimental.
No. Yeah, before
do you have extra Vagisil at home? Or are you going to be okay?
Yeah, I got extra Vagisil. As soon as I heard I was going to be on Robbie's show, I went out and got a case of Vagisil. What, are you kidding me?
Robbie could have just let you borrow some. That would have been fine.
For our first, honestly, I think we're going to have more tag teams on because this was awesome, you guys, the way you were talking back and forth with each other. And this was honestly one of our best episodes. So we really appreciate you guys being on. And I mean, I know you're still active doing everything as far as like bookings and Twitter and Instagram. Is there any stuff you guys want to drop?
I mean, they can hit me up on Instagram or Twitter at Chaz Mosh. Most of the bookings I've been kind of sending to Glenn and let him handle them. Only because I got so much other stuff going on. I kind of let him handle that. But, yeah, at Chaz Mosh on Twitter or Instagram. And go ahead, Glenn.
And mine's at GR Thrasher on Twitter. And I follow back. Chaz doesn't. He's the mean one.
look, if I don't find you interesting, I'm not following you. If you want me to follow you, do something interesting.
Yeah, like you said, I'm, you know, handle most of the bookings now. What I do now is I'm a GM for a health club, so I'm constantly in the gym. I think we still have, you know, so much to offer, and I think, you know, now that both of us are in better shapes now than we were when we were up there with Vince.
Do you have an email for bookings, or do they just get you through Twitter?
You can do, I have chazmosh at gmail also. Everything's chazmosh. So I have chazmosh@gmail.com. You can send emails there, and then I just either answer or I send it over to Glenn.
Well, we can't thank you enough for being here this week, guys. It's a great interview. Of course, reach out to these guys on Twitter, you know, if you want to get a hold of them. Robbie, like you said, this was a great interview, and thanks for being here this week on Wide Ended. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. And again, as soon as Robbie asked, I couldn't say no. I usually say no to these, but for him, I couldn't say no. Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah. This is awesome.
Hey, thanks, man. You guys have a nice night, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All
you
right,
too.
Guys. See ya.
Let's get your laughing going on. Come on. Let's do it.
Hey, we had the Headbangers on. Robbie, let me tell you something. I am not joking here. I think we should do just tag teams from now on. I thought that was fucking the best thing ever. It was wonderful. What did you think of the Headbangers and interviewing for the first time?
Well, I don't, I wasn't that great at math in high school. You could probably guess it. So it seems like we had more people on than usual, but somehow it came out smoother. How is that possible?
I think it was because, like, you know, if someone doesn't have something interesting to say, the other person has something to say. And I would personally just like to thank Mosh for allowing Thrasher to speak as much as he did.
It seemed like that. Well, I mean, Thrasher was the leader of the team for the first years, and then I guess Mosh took over for the later years. But I mean, either way, I mean, what a story, what a circle of life, the way how that, you know, how their WWE careers ended originally, but then to come back full circle, and they're both in such a good place right now. Great jobs. You know, Mosh was so happy to get to wrestle in front of his kid, which is, you know, just hearing him say that was cool, because I could think of how the things that I want my children to see. So I completely understand. And I really enjoyed listening to them. They're just two entertaining guys.
Yeah. And I think people sleep on the Headbangers as far as, you know, an iconic tag team, because they were a big part of that pre-Attitude era. And they were, you know, at the very top of the card as far as tag team titles with the New Age Outlaws. And also, we can't forget the Beaver Cleavage situation. So I think a very memorable show. And I think more than anything, showing what Wyatt Ended is all about.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And fuck, I just had a...
So here's the funny thing. So Robbie sometimes loses focus during shows because he's just super, like, he needs to be doing like push-ups or something, or what, I don't know what exercises, I don't know the names of exercises, but you know what I mean.
You got push-ups, that's one.
Push-ups is, it's ice cream, so I remembered it. But, you know, for you, I thought it was really great to have two people, because it kind of kept you engaged, me engaged, and the listeners engaged.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm in my phone right now, and that's why I'm slurring over my words, because I'm responding to a text.
I'm trying to salvage this shit, Robbie. What's going on?
Sorry, something important was going on.
I'm so sorry.
Now that the show's not important, guys.
Yeah, oh, of course not. Hey, so speaking of
great show, we appreciate it. Twitter, Wyatt Ended. Instagram, Wyatt Ended. My new Twitter and Instagram at Robert Strauss.
And you have a new Facebook as well?
I have a new, same Facebook, but just, you know, it's changed from my Robbie E. like page to a Robert Strauss like page. And then, of course, this Sunday, guys, enjoy your Thanksgiving. But, you know, for the wrestling weekend, there's a lot going down. WrestleCade's going down. I'm not going to be there, but I am going to be in Mississauga, Canada for a big, pay-per-view thing on Fight TV for Destiny Wrestling, which is looking to be a very huge show.
Yeah, that's very cool. I usually make it down to WrestleCade. I don't think I'm going this year, but if I could be anywhere in the world, I would be in what is it in Canada?
Mississauga, Ontario. And it really is going to be a big show. It's stacked.
Dude, and what's that travel like?
As far as the day, it'll be easy travel. Mm-hmm.
Okay, just curious. I Canada. Jersey. Yeah, that's true.
Well, Jersey's on a short flight.
Yeah, that sounds great. Hey, guys, I hope you're enjoying the show, and we will see you next week. Happy Thanksgiving on...
Gobble, gobble. Oh, Wyatt Ended. How do you do a turkey voice?
I'm not... Why are you asking me? Do you think I know how to do a turkey voice?
Does a turkey lay eggs, or is that just a chicken?
Well, there we go. Happy Thanksgiving from your family and friends here at...